Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Open Mic Comedy Podcast. I'm your host, Mark. If this is your first time here, welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. This podcast is here for everyone on the Open Mic Comedy Circuit, whether you're a comedian, an MC, a promoter, a tutor, in fact, anybody who has any involvement in this industry. Even comedy fans who really do enjoy spending their time in pub basements watching the possible stars of the future. If you're thinking, I could do that, then this podcast will give you the inside track on what to expect on this crazy circuit. If you've seen the thumbnail, you know who today's guest is. For me, as someone new on the circuit, this person is always one that comes up in conversation as a great person and an outstanding comic. The list of accolades is outstanding. Sit back and listen to this. 2 Northbound New Act Competition 2021 finalist. Comedy Bloomers LGBTQ Plus New Comedian of the Year 2022 semi-finalist. Museum of Comedy Not So New Comedian of the Year 2023 runner-up. Southport New Comedian 2023 runner-up. Won the Blackout and Beat the Frog in 2023. A GMB All-Star 2023 winner. A New Forest New Comedian of the Year 2023 winner. And finally, Leicester Square New Comedian of the Year 2023 winner. So it's my great pleasure to welcome to the stage, Sally Ann Fellows. Hello, Sally.
Hi.
How are you?
All right, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How's things going at the moment?
Yeah, all right, thanks. Sorry it took me 15 minutes to connect to you, but I'm technically inept. Even with the help of my partner, I was just like, what am I doing here? Oh, my God.
But sorry. Even within a few seconds, making people laugh.
Well, I don't know about that. Nice to speak to you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I've been looking forward to this conversation. I mentioned before that you've been requested a number of times by people I've spoken to. So it's nice to get you on here and have a chat and see how
things began
and how you got to where you've got to.
So, just hear me sitting on the sofa. I saw this advert for a comedy competition. It was before the lockdown. And I thought, because I'm an actor, allegedly an actor, not a very good one. I mean, I'd gone for this job, right, as a dead body, but I hadn't got the job. That's how bad an actor I was. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to try a comedy course just for something fun to do. I didn't think I'd actually do it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And then there was a lockdown and I thought, oh, I'm not doing it. So people were saying, why don't you try an online gig? And I said, all right then. And it was awful. This man heckled me from America because he wanted me to invest in his film. And I said, oh, I'm trying to do a comedy bit. And he said, I know, but do you want to? And I went, no. And I just thought, I really hate this. This is horrendous. And so, so God knows how I've got to where I am. Just keeping going, really. I think that's the advice I would have to somebody who is looking to do it. Don't stop. So I didn't.
So when you did the course itself, was the ambition to actually progress into doing comedy after the course, or was the course just something to kind of fill in some time and have some fun with?
No, it was literally something to fill in some time because, I was a bit down about not being cast as a dead body because I literally had to lay on the floor and hold my breath. And I thought, well, an idiot could do that and I'm worse than that. So I didn't get the job. And I'd had an acting agency. Well, no, I wasn't the agency. I was on their books.
Yeah.
And they'd given me the sack because what it was, like, this is really grim, but I was cast in this film with, I can't think what she's called. Oh, yeah, Sheila Hancock. Right, she's really famous, isn't she? And I was really nervous. And I had to walk down 50 stairs, bearing in mind I'm really dyspraxic, not look at my feet, and then say to her, welcome to my nursing home. You'll be very comfortable here, or something like that.
Yeah.
And every time I came down the stairs, I said something different. And she was trying to encourage me because I didn't even realize I was saying it wrong. I was so nervous. And she was doing this without moving her mouth. She went, you're doing really well, Sally Ann. You're doing really well, Sally Ann. And I thought she was having a stroke. And I was like, oh my God, why is no one taking any notice? And then the agency sacked me. And I didn't know why. And it was because I was forgetting the lines. In the actual film, I went to watch it. All you see is my head appear and then go again. No words at all. Because they've cut that bit. How shameful. One line. One line.
But
oh, the embarrassment.
The one thing I do have to ask, though, is who did get cast as the dead body?
Well, I don't know, but I'm going to burn them. So then they're dead twice, aren't they?
I was going to say, they've had practice already.
I know, isn't it? I mean, they could have got like a dressmaker's dummy, couldn't they, and put makeup on it. But no, they wanted a real person to go all the way into London and lay on a liner and be filmed and then not get the job. How awful is that?
I'm not sure what to say about that.
Yeah, just a number for a counsellor would be good. Have you got any numbers?
So I think it's fair to say that you've moved beyond the open mic comedy circuit now and into kind of semi-pro, proper work, appearing on bigger bills and things like that.
Yeah.
How long were you actually on the open mic circuit as such for?
Well, if you count the 2 years of lockdown, because I was ill after lockdown, if you count those years, then probably just under 5 years, just sort of slogging away. I mean, I did some really, really, really bad gigs. So people that are just starting out thinking, I've done a bad gig, I don't want to go back. I have a qualification in bad gigs. I did a gig in Brighton one time, and this woman rushed the stage with something wrapped up that looked like a dead baby. It wasn't a dead baby.
Okay.
I was terrified, and she said, do you want this? And I said, what is it? I was on stage, and she said it's £13, and it was a bottle of champagne she'd nicked from Tesco. And then she went, oh, no, it's not, it's 15. And I went, it's gone up £2 in a couple of seconds. She said, do you want it or not? I went, I'm doing my bit. She went, all right, then. I'll wait for you by the toilets. That was honestly. And then a man told me to F off from outside with his head through the window. And he said, look, at least come in and do it. Do you know what I mean? Make an effort. And I thought, I don't think this is for me. Do you know?
I mean, I was expecting a bad gig to be, oh, the jokes didn't land, not to be offered alcohol on the stage, bartering prices and getting shouted at through a side window.
I know, by a man who didn't even bother to come in. And then the same woman tried to push some pills underneath the toilet door while I was having a wee. And I went, I'm not interested. I don't do that kind of stuff. And she said, I think you need it. I thought, I probably do, to be fair. Probably do need it.
I think, bad. I think it's fair to say, then, it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah, an interesting journey. And I think, in a way, although it was awful, I think lockdown helped. So not doing it for ages made me miss everything. But yep. It made me miss it when I didn't really like it that much before that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's become... It's one of those things that I've found, because I've, for some viewers and listeners as such, and yourself, is I've only been doing this just over a year. And my intention was never to do anything beyond a course and a showcase. That was it. It was just a bit of a laugh and
have
fun.
Oh, right, yeah.
But then you do that and you kind of go, oh, this is actually quite fun.
Yeah.
And then you start going to a lot of the open mic nights that I've found. Like, I know we're both fond of G&B, for example.
Yeah.
You can have what you would term as a bad night there where things didn't land and things didn't go as you expected, but you still end up in a room with 12, 15 other people, other comics,
yeah.
And you're just chatting to them and having fun with them.
And so, it's supportive.
Yeah. And you're in that situation where, okay, what you did on stage didn't go that well, but you then get the encouragement from the other people to, okay, this is something you could change, something you could do. think about this, think about that. And it then gets your mind thinking about, okay, so next time I'll do that and I'll make myself better. And you just keep striving for that. I want to get better. I want to get better. I want to do what that person on the stage does that has entertained me for the last 5-7 minutes.
Yeah, and also Kyle's really supportive and he does a lot for the new acts as well.
Yeah.
Helping them with promotion and sort of guidance and stuff. So I'm really glad that I went there. You know, I seriously thank everything for that. Even though I did break my finger on the toilet door at Star of Kings. Who does that?
I nearly broke my neck at the Star of Kings going down the stairs.
No way.
Yeah, I was probably 2 steps from the top. Walking down, and one of my feet went, literally like Lauren Hardy slipped out in front of me. I had a drink in one hand and I grabbed the banister with the other and somehow I balanced. But I had one of those moments in slow motion where you're looking forward and you go, I'm going to hit that floor.
Yeah, that's
if I
it.
Don't hold on, I'm hitting that floor I'm face first. It.
Yeah,
and I hadn't even done my bit. That was at the interval part.
Oh, you hadn't done it.
No, so I was at the point where I was in this what felt like a minute, which was realistically only like 3 seconds. I've gone, I'm going to hit that floor. How am I going to tell Kyle that I can't perform because I've smashed my face to pieces?
Or am I going to be like unconscious? So I won't be able to tell
I didn't
him
even
anything.
Get that far. But luckily, I held onto the banister. And I'd done something to my back, but I still carried on and did.
You managed to do it.
Yeah, it was still good fun, but yeah.
Oh my god, that's worse. I mean, mine wasn't as frightening as that. It was just painful because you know, you have to push the outside door of the toilet.
Yes,
there's not a handle. There might be now, but and I pushed it as somebody else was pushing it hard because they were carrying a toddler, and my finger just shattered upwards. And I just went, oh. And it was a guy, and he didn't say anything. And I didn't have that sort of, you know, in me to go, oh my finger.
Yeah.
I just pointed to my drooping finger, and he went, shrug, like, what? And then he went into the toilet. I think I was just looking for sympathy, you know, I was just looking for something. Anything, another Diet Coke or something. Oh, I didn't half hurt. Yours is a lot braver. Yours involved courage.
Instinct, just to catch a banister, but it could have all ended really, really badly on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, that could have gone bad. That could have been an ambulance crew. You could have featured on one of those documentaries, you know. Here's Mark, he's a comedian. He was doing his best. He's lost his pint.
It wasn't even alcohol. It was just
coke. Oh, it wasn't. Oh no! But obviously, you must have dropped it. I guess almost.
No, I kept hold of it. I get hold of both things.
You kept hold of the drink as well.
Yeah, I spilled a bit of it, but the glass stayed in my hand.
That is a massive skill.
It's more luck than anything.
That's award winning. That is. That's award winning fall or attempt at fall.
So with the, I'm always intrigued at how you make this transition from like the open mic to the semi-pros stuff. In effect, is it a case of not so much you get spotted, but when you enter the competition, it's like you've entered and you become runner up and finalist and winner.
Yeah.
Then people start saying, okay, we're going to now book you for a proper paid spot at a certain club, and then things just do they contribute as part of the prize for those things or?
I haven't had a spot as part of a prize, but I have had situations now where promoters contact me and ask me to perform. So that never used to happen before. I was thinking, who are these stalkers, people coming up, you know, on my phone, giving me spots? I mean, I'm chuffed. I'm really pleased. But before that, what I used to do is try and get a 10 spot.
Yeah.
Which is very often unpaid on a pro or semi-pro lineup. And it's kind of tight in a way because you often have to go a long way for no money at all.
Yeah.
But then if you do all right, then very often you'll get a longer spot for money. I've basically done a lot of 10 spots for a lot of clubs all over the UK. And a lot of the time I've spent my own money. which I know I'll never get back, but it's better than not being cast as a dead body, isn't it, on the floor of a lino?
yeah, probably.
Yeah, but, well, it is.
So you kind of do like the, what are your usual length of spots you do nowadays then?
Usually 20.
Okay.
Sometimes I do 10. It depends on the club really, because the smaller ones tend to want maybe a 15 to close, or sometimes they'll go to a 20. But yeah, I normally get paid stuff now. That sounds boasty. It's just
no. It's what people that listen to this might be aspiring to actually do, rather than treat this as, at the moment for me, this is very much a hobby. There's no aspirations or expectations to become anything other than 5, 7, 10s, unpaid, having fun, enjoying it.
Yeah.
But there will
because
be other people out there.
If it's not fun though, Mark, if it's not fun, why do it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's that's so, so true. I did a, there's also one thing I think a lot of people need to, somebody said in a previous episode that was a quote that I think is very, very apt about the open mic comedy circuit, was they said, don't kill yourself over your hobby.
Yeah.
And you kind of, I heard that, it was like, yeah, you're right. Some, if you are of the level that I am, that just wants to have fun, if it doesn't go well one week, it might go well the next. Don't beat yourself up about it.
It doesn't matter. And it's probably nothing to do with you. It could be any number of factors. You know, when I first started doing open mic, there was, I don't know if it's still, it probably still like this. There was a lot of cliques of quite well, a bunch of quite well-to-do 30s, late 20s, 30s. They were all in this clique. And if I tried to talk to them, they'd turn their back on me.
Okay.
So I didn't have any friends on the comedy scene at all. Till I started going to gym, no friends at all. A lot of those people aren't doing comedy anymore.
No.
So, that's a very cruel, weird laugh there. But that's I had to do that because it's like a self-fulfilling thing. But basically, they were horrible to me. And they would sit in the front and they would laugh at each other's stuff.
Yeah.
But where, as soon as I went up, they'd get their phone out, start scrolling.
Oh, okay.
And talk behind their hands, like being in school, you know, yeah. Horrible. But yeah. So that, if that's happening to you, don't stop. Don't stop, because there's better places to go than that. There are.
Yeah. Everyone that I've spoken to, that because I've come through like the course kind of route, and from our course, there's a massive like WhatsApp group now of everybody that's in there.
And, oh, have
and,
you?
And I what happens then is that anybody else that does the same course with the same tutor gets added to the same group. And then it's like helping each other out. And my advice always is one of the first open mic nights you should do is GMB if you're in London, because it just brings you into a comfortable environment, which is non-judgmental and friendly.
And
it eases you in, rather than walking into a room where you know nobody, and everything's, like you say, you've got people sat off in one corner, people sat off in another corner, and you feel like you're very much on your own until you've pulled up to do your five.
Yeah.
But as part of what seems to happen with GMB is there seems to be a lot of mingling beforehand, and hello, how are you, introducing yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, never be – I once sat next to somebody and she came over and just started talking to me, and it's just like really friendly and stuff. And I said, oh, are you performing tonight? And it turned out that person was actually the headliner for tonight.
Right.
And you kind of think, oh, I've made a real big faux pas here, saying, you know, not recognizing this person. But that person fully well knows that I don't know who they are.
Exactly. And how could you know everybody?
Yeah.
And you bump into so many other people doing comedy. I met somebody that I'd gigged with about 2-3 years ago, who didn't have glasses on the other day, and I didn't recognize him. And as soon as he started talking, I recognized his accent, and I went, oh, you're not as blind as I thought. But anyway, he said, no, I actually broke my glasses. I've got contacts in. I went, all right. But I mean, I've got terrible eyesight. I can hardly see. I can see you just about, but
yeah,
I was born like that. So I'm always terrified I'm going to fall off a high stage. I am, because I have done it. Really. I fell on this man. That was on the way to a stage. And it was just after the lockdown. I didn't have anything to help myself up and it was dark. So I grabbed the nearest thing and it was his bald head. And I thought, oh, it was weird. It was like a man thing. And he was horrified. And then I said, I'm sorry, I'm disabled. Then I trod on his foot. So he was very annoyed and he moved seats. I thought, oh, this is going to go really well. So, yeah, I can't see where I'm going. I drive a car, be afraid. Oh, no.
Okay, that kind of leads nicely on to the next two questions, which are kind of interlinked, is that what's the best and worst moments you've had on stage?
Well, one of the worst ones was when a guy actually joined me on stage. He was quite drunk and he was trying to grab me. And he was saying things like, tell us a joke. I mean, I was trying to do that, but obviously I was failing. And I couldn't jump off the stage to get away from him because it was really high. And eventually somebody helped me get rid of him. I think that was probably the worst because nobody laughed. And it turned out that in the room next door, there was a wake going on. And that was why. I mean, I think that's hilarious. Nobody else thought it was, though, because I've got quite a dark sense of humour. And the one with the woman with the champagne, that was grim, because I think that was about my second gig.
Okay.
And, and what was the other question? The best one?
Yeah. What's the most memorable one you're most proud of?
I suppose if I've won a competition, I guess that's, I mean, it's always a surprise. I was really surprised when I won the Leicester Square one.
Yeah.
I mean, the photographs of me with my hands over my face, people are going, oh, you're just a good actor. I went, no, I'm not a good actor. Can I refer you to my first story?
If I was a good actor.
I'm really not.
If I was a good actor, I'd be playing dead people at the moment on Lino Floors.
Exactly. I would be in that there casualty on the telly box if it was still on. One of those moments where it's such a surprise that it takes weeks to sink in.
Yeah.
I guess that's great, isn't it?
So what happened? So the moment you're announced you're as the Leicester Square New Comedian of the Year 2023 winner, what happens?
People clapped and I think they said winner first and then my name. I thought, why is he saying my name? I didn't understand. I thought, I've done something wrong. I don't know what have I done. And somebody pushed me a little bit in a gentle way forward. Yeah. And they went, oh, that it's me. It's actually me.
Yeah.
I'm even sort of quite overwhelmed thinking about it now. And then they give you a microphone and you have to say something. I don't know what I said. I mean, I might have said just thank you or something. I don't know, because I was so surprised. And then everyone claps and then you go away again. That's what happens.
But then after that, what in terms of, because was at what point would you say you became semi-pro or starting to get onto the pro bills? Was it because of the Leicester Square one or was it because of all the stuff that had happened before that?
I'm not sure that the competitions are necessarily a massive part of it.
Okay.
I honestly, people worry that they don't have a competition credit. I've seen people do really well and get paid work without having any competition finalists or anything like that. So I think it helps, but I don't think it's everything. I'd already got some paid work before that competition. I think just from doing unpaid 10 spots and just knocking on people's doors, well, not literally, because that would be weird. The police would be involved. God.
Hi, Kyle. It's me again.
Hello.
You didn't know.
What are you having for tea? So just doing 10 spots for people that I've seen advertised in the Facebook thing and and just looking. When I've seen, you know, when people put, oh, these are my gigs for the month, I never do that. Do you do that?
I do that, yeah.
Do you do it? Yep. Well, fair play to you, but I can't be asked. But I look at that and I go, oh, what have I done that place before? So if you're doing that, you're helping people who are very lazy like me, who can see what, oh, that looks like a nice night. I'll apply for that.
Yeah.
This is what the lazy people do. Beware of us. I'm behind your sofa watching you.
I do actually. The main reason I do that, I started doing it anyway, was because that my theory behind it was that if I'm actively promoting where I'm going to be, it's tagging, it's promoting the night as well for the promoters.
Oh yeah, totally. That's not a criticism.
No. But I think it's something that for new acts as well coming through is if you have the time to be able to do it, it's always something good to do, because then the promoter will remember you doing that and making that effort. And if you make that effort with them, then they'll make that, most of them, not all of them, most of them will make the effort with you.
Yeah.
And they'll then start tagging you in their various stories they put out on the night.
Yeah. So
you get a nice picture and all of that. And you can build up a nice little, I guess my comedy Instagram is it's not a portfolio, it's a memory box now of everything I've done and where I've been. So when I do get to whatever age I get to and I can't remember anything, I can look through that to remember how to log in and go, I did that one.
When you've gone totally mad.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, is that me there? What's happened?
Oh, granddad's talking about playing at Backyard Comedy Club again, you know?
Yeah, not that old chestnut.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good idea. I'm just basically too lazy. But that is what I do. I look at posters on Instagram of people. So I've got a cat hair on my, covered in cat hair, Mark. So a long-haired cat. So I haven't got a beard. or have I? But Instagram posters, I like looking at them and thinking, oh, is that something I can apply for?
Yeah.
And very often I don't get it. I don't get it. There's several places that won't book me, that book everybody that I know. So that's probably because I don't put my list up like you. That's why they hate me.
I'm sure it's
now not. I know. We've learned.
I think the whole, especially on the open, you want to be noticed and you want to get some of the better gigs, and you don't want to be doing the same ones over and over again, because I always find if you're doing the same ones in front of a lot of the same crowd, then the natural reaction to a joke is not as impactful as it was the first time they've heard it.
No, because they've seen it. They know what's coming.
So being able to dip in and out and go to various other places, maybe even doing places like certain places once a month every time rather than every week, you get a chance to finesse your set and change things. And then those people that have been paying attention to you for the last couple of months will notice something has changed or something is different. And you know, they'll come up to you. If they come up to you and say, oh, that's the best I've ever seen you do, then you're like, yeah, thank you. That's all I need to hear.
Yeah.
It's progression.
That's a great compliment, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I don't like it when somebody comes up to you and just it's a bit of a nondescript comment. But somebody that makes the effort and goes, I really enjoyed that part. I had somebody who came up to me once at the end of a show and said, I know I've seen you three times before. I never remember why until you deliver your final punchline. And every time you deliver the final punchline, I smile and I laugh and I think, yes, that's the one I remember I find funny. And it's just like, thank you. Now I've just got to make the first 4 minutes funny so he remembers it before I get to the punchline.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm pleased for you, because that's a nice thing to hear. And the thing you don't want to hear from a member of the public is, oh, you're so brave.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got nothing else to say other than, I couldn't do that.
Yes, well, great. So basically what they're saying in a passive-aggressive way is, you were shite.
I remember,
isn't it?
Yeah. I remember seeing somebody do a routine about being told you're so brave. It's like, no, brave is going to war. Brave is not standing up in front of five people for 5 minutes trying to tell a joke.
Exactly. I know. But they really think it is. And I've been told that by people in the armed services, and I don't understand. That's insane.
Yeah.
That I'm not, I'm only going to die figuratively, hopefully. No, not hopefully, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm not going to actually, that somebody shoots me while I'm up there. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I also think there's an expect. I don't know what it's like now on semi-pro stuff, but I somebody once told me that if you look at if you think you're going to die on stage, don't necessarily worry about it. If you take gigs as a chunk, so his advice to me was if you look at 10 gigs, he said one of them may be exceptional, two may be good,
yeah.
Three will be utter shite, and the rest will just be meh, average.
Yeah.
As long as you work to that kind of ratio and accept that's going to happen, because you're not going to kill every night, but you're not going to bomb every night either.
No.
So accept that there's a mixture of what's going to happen. And as long as you can process it and deal with it in that way, you can keep going.
Yeah. And also, if you go up there with even the slightest inkling that somebody won't like your stuff or like you, you will fail.
Yeah.
You have to go up there with the intention of having fun. And just try and do that, even if they're just arms folded, staring at you.
Yeah.
Like sometimes I find in the countryside, they don't get me as much, but I make a joke of it. You know, I mean, in Cornwall, I've had from one guy said to me, Brexit means Brexit. And I was just like, I mean, it wasn't even the Brexit time. And I said, What does that actually mean? And he honestly said, Brexit. I was like, oh, that's why you all voted.
Yeah.
Nobody knows what's going on. they don't understand. It's all like sort of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Cave people.
That's one thing I wanted to talk about actually with you was you beat the blackout and you beat the frog as well.
Yeah.
So you did those just last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So what made you go to do them?
The reason I went to do them is because I wanted to have a video that had a backdrop that wasn't an open mic.
Okay.
And that's honestly no offence to anybody who runs an open mic. There's lots of really, really good ones. But some promoters will know what is an open mic and what isn't.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to have something. I know it's only 5 minutes, but it's got a backdrop that everybody recognises in the sort of business, inverted commas, whatever you want to call it. And also, I like going up north and places like that because you can do your material and sort of give it another breath of life somewhere else where no one's heard it.
Okay.
So that's basically that's the reason for that.
I like that. It's not I feel like I have to justify myself to be able to beat a gong show. I just want that clip.
It was purely the clip. I didn't go there because I wanted specifically to win the night, and I did on both ones. Although the first time I did beat the blackout, I got carded off. After 2 minutes, by get this, three special needs teachers. They didn't want a busman's holiday. They thought, oh no, somebody with disabilities. Oh God, we have that all day. We don't want that. Kill her. So that was it.
Mm-hmm.
All three of them. I was like, oh, the irony.
Yeah.
So yeah.
No, because I did one. I did a blackout, and I actually changed. This is a good thing about when you talk about, you kind of got to be true to yourself and don't change too much. Is that one of the judges was I would say he was a mid 50s type guy. Look, he'd been retired, so he's obviously done quite well. And I made the assumption that he's he looked very well dressed and was probably a conservative voter.
Yeah,
and in my start of my set, I have two jokes that basically lean into conservatives and how they've run the country over the last few years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I deliberately took those out because I didn't want to piss him off.
Oh, no, never do
I know,
that.
I know, it's a complete mistake because I went on 2 minutes dead.
Yeah.
So I went with something that wasn't polished and wasn't prepared that I kind of won on the day because I thought, if I can keep him on side, then I'm not going to – that's one vote I can guarantee that's not going to go up. But no, it didn't work.
No, go for the laughs of the majority. And if you've got somebody there who – this, I mean, I don't know everything, anything – but if you've got somebody who's not on side, you use them as a stooge, if you like.
Yeah.
So if you've got somebody, this is only what I do. I've got a load of like big old slaphead geezers who want to fight on yeah. the front. Sometimes I'll say to them, "Are your arms glued together? who did this to you?" And if they're still doing it, I'd be like, right, now do you want to fight? I can't do it now, but I'll see you outside and I'll keep returning to them until hopefully everybody laughs at them.
Yeah.
So it's not in a mean way, but it's just...
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think when you get to that level and you have the ability to play around with the audience and do that, I think that's such a talent to what the... You see on an open mic circuit where you go on and you've got 5 minutes and you've got your set in your head for 5 minutes and
you haven't got time.
Yeah, you can't deviate. But when
you haven't got time. But
if you have that ability to instead of doing five, you have four with a minute's worth of playtime, then yeah. I think that's so worth exploring if you can get to that comfortable stage.
And I would say, honestly, trust yourself, even if it's 5 minutes, if somebody disrupts you, don't ever ignore it, because you're present in the room. You're not reciting something like a robot.
Yeah.
You can't, if somebody drops a glass right next to you, if you ignore that, it's weird for the audience.
Yeah.
Because they've all noticed.
Yeah.
So you're their eyes. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. You want to make every night should be a unique experience for the audience. And
it should be
just ignoring something that's so obvious.
Yeah.
Is just, it doesn't put you in the room.
Yeah. It makes you out of the room.
Yeah.
And I always, always, even when I first started, I record, audio record my sets. Even if it's so painful, like on the bus, you go, I don't think I can listen to this.
Yeah.
Always do it, because do you know what? You might come out with a little nugget of something that's different because of something that's
yeah.
happened. And then later on, it's gone, isn't it? Like, what did I say? I don't know.
Being able to look back on what you've done, I think, is such an important thing to be able to do, because you'll never grow, you'll never change if you keep doing the same stuff over and over and over again. And then keep banging your head against a brick wall going, this isn't working. I know it's not working, but you keep pursuing with it and not actually understanding why it's not working. It could just be a change of a sentence. It could be removing a sentence.
And it could be that you're anticipating it not landing. And the audience can see that. You going back to the gong thing. I was watching the other acts because I was on sort of in the last half of it, but I was watching people and as they saw one card come up, or whatever the thing is they're holding, you could see the whole body language changing. You could see them sinking visibly.
Yeah.
And I thought, ah, I mustn't do that. I must not do that. I must lean in harder.
Yeah.
With how I'm... Does that make sense?
No, it does. It makes complete sense. I always said to people is that you should never do a gong show too early in your comedy journey as such.
No, unless you're so confident you're just out there. But
yeah, I actually did one on my seventh ever gig.
And oh,
But it was more of a get together of everybody that had done the course. It was like, oh, let's few of us enter this and have a bit of a laugh. And nobody took it really seriously.
Yeah.
But I remember being on stage, and I remember when the lights flash to say your 2 minutes is now it's a free for all. I remember that going off, And all I could ever think was I was going through my routine, going through it, and everything seemed to be going quite well. And every so often in my brain, every 10 seconds, it goes, you're still here. You're still on this stage. And I couldn't see who the judges were. I almost, on the first one, so struck with, I can't see anything. I'm not looking at judge. I'm just looking around and trying to do stuff.
Yeah.
And then I got gonged off for like 4.5 minutes or something. But
That was so unfortunate. Oh, you nearly got there.
Yeah. But then I had no idea who the order that the cards went. I never, because when you're on the, for those that don't know, up the creek, there's three lights to your right hand side when you're on the stage.
That's right.
And I can't see them when I'm on the stage.
Yeah.
So I've got no idea. So once that card goes up, it's just like, and if they put the card back down again and the light's gone on, it's like, okay, whatever. But I haven't seen the card because I'm just, the lights are on the stage and you're just kind of like so struck about where you're actually performing in front of 200 plus people on a proper comedy stage.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, this is great. And then it's like, and I'm still here. How am I still here? This must be 5 minutes. This feels like it's going on forever. And then it's like, no, you're out. I'm like, ah. It's like, to the wife, how long did I last? 4.5 minutes. All right, I'll take that.
Ah, unlucky. Did you do it again after that?
Yeah, and I went out on two. Literally straight away, the light flashed and then it was like card. And I was like, okay, not doing it again. Not for a long time.
Do you know what? I think, I don't know if you do this, but I think I talk a lot faster when I'm doing a gong show. Because when I was at the Beat the Frog, I thought, that's my usual 5 minutes. I'm going to have to start something else. So I started another joke. And then they played the music and I thought, does that mean I'm gonged off or I'm not gonged off? I can't remember because like, you get nervous, don't you?
Yes.
I mean, I do. I always do. Always. I do this thing. I don't know. Shall I tell you my for nerves trick? Tell you what I do. So I take a deep breath as if I'm filling a really big dress that's bigger than me.
Yeah.
And then I let all the air out as if I'm absolutely empty, like concave empty.
Yeah.
And then I count to eight and then I breathe normally. And that resets it. And I'm doing that as I walk to the mic every time.
Yeah.
So that does work.
Yeah, I did a course run by Kyle Wallace called Everything But the Gags, which was all about...
Oh, yeah, I did that. It's really good, isn't
it? Yeah, and I remember one thing he always said was that when you go from the side of the stage to walking onto the stage, don't go with your dominant foot. So don't, if you're right-footed, don't walk right foot first. Walk left foot first.
Yeah.
Because it does something to your brain as you get there that... I don't know. I don't quite understand what it is, but I remember him saying it specifically is go...
Yeah.
You just, the way you push yourself onto that stage is slightly different.
I think it keeps you in the moment more. I don't quite know why, but I think didn't Paul Daniels do that or somebody famous?
I'm not sure. It might be where Paul got the idea from.
Yeah, I think he said it was Paul Daniels that did it, but like Paul Daniels is nice. Well, he's dead anyway, so who cares? But he was very homophobic, so. So but apparently, yes, take his skill and you can still hate him. It's fine.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But no, I always thought it was an interesting coping mechanism.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Because I know I get on stage, even I'm one of those that'll be looking at notes literally to the last second in my head.
Do you?
And going through it, going, and just trying to make sure that I remember sections that I need to do. Not exactly words, but sections. And then when I get on stage, I end up, sometimes if it's not quite landing at the start, I'll start using too many words and not letting jokes breathe and start not talking over jokes, but you know, sometimes where you say a joke and you just don't say a word and you allow the audience to absorb it and then enjoy it and then laugh. But if you go too quickly, you don't give them the chance to do that.
Yes, because what some people do as well is they don't make the punchline clear enough.
Yeah.
Their voice drops at the end of the joke or material or whatever. And so it isn't that it isn't funny, but that the audience are not hearing it properly.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's just a confidence thing. I definitely used to do it. I would start off strong and then go, Sheila Hancock in that film. And then they'd all be staring at me. Like I was mad. I am mad. But I don't write on my hand. Do you write on your hand?
I never used to.
No.
And then I did one gig. I mentioned this before. I did one gig where I did a whole set. It wasn't improvised. I had an idea in my head and I smashed through it. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And then what I did was I took the transcript from that and I wrote it all out and then tried to refine it. And the next time I went on stage after refining it, I forgot sections of where I was supposed to be going. And I literally on the stage, walking around the stage going, da, 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 da.
Yeah.
And the audience were actually enjoying it, which was really nice. And I had an audience member throw out one of my earlier lines to try and get me back on track.
Yeah, cool.
But he chucked out the wrong line. He said it wrong. So I went back to him and said, no, it's 26 years, not 25. And it kind of then relaxed into the whole thing.
Yeah.
I was like, now I know where I'm going.
Yeah.
Because the next part was actually about how as you get older, you forget things. And it works.
So that was funny because
you
were talking about that.
But then what I did try to do, so after that, what I always did on my hand was I'd write three letters and one letter was for every single section. So it meant if I did have that brain fart moment, I could look at my wrist, look at my hand and go, okay, it's a B. I know what B stands for. It stands for brain.
Yeah.
I can then move into it. So I didn't have like all the notes written down. But one funny thing that I thought was funny anyway, after that was that I thought maybe I can incorporate that into my set.
Yeah.
So I did it. A G&B night, and I thought it's a nice friendly room, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not sure if it was at a competition night or not, but I started doing it. I got to that point and I just went, this bit is the bit that I always goes from my head. I can't remember it. And I heard a girl in the front row, she just went, oh no. She was like, please remember, you could see that anxiety. I was like, oh yeah, and it's because we forget things. And then it was like I've taken the room got really tense thinking this guy's on stage and he doesn't know what he's doing, and then I was kind of like, whew, release the tension.
And I bet that got a laugh then, didn't it? Yeah, exactly.
And it's knowing how to work things like that in. And
that's really good. And I know a lot of people worry about forgetting their set, but it's if you're having a normal conversation with somebody and you forget what you're going to say, you would do just that, wouldn't you? You'd go, oh, what was it I was going to say?
Yeah.
And you'd do that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And that's okay. You can, it's fine. Sometimes I say to people at the front, what was I going to say? And they say, I don't know. And I'm just like, oh, not useful. And then it comes back. I can't do that writing on my hand because I wouldn't be able to read it. I wouldn't be able to read it. I'd be like, what is that? It's like a spider.
Yeah.
No.
I used to, I did a gig with a guy that I know locally here, and he hadn't gigged for years, but he was asked to go back and do a couple of little spots near where we live. And he walked on stage with his notebook and all it had was like big words written in Sharpie pens. For different sections and jokes, and he just handed it to an audience member and said, right, you're going to have to follow that because I haven't done this for about 3 years, so I need to know I'm on the right track. And it was
funny.
It was he never needed the book. He never needed it, but it kind of brought the audience into the whole thing.
Yeah,
it was really nice to see, and it worked so well, and I think he's done it ever since now.
No, that's a really good idea because, I mean, most people, if they go to a comedy show, they want to laugh.
Yeah.
They don't go there to, unless it's like, I don't know, a gong show and they're just out for blood.
Yeah.
Most people don't go to be like nasty, do they?
No, they want to laugh and they want to have fun and they want it to be a memorable night. So it relies on the, if they support the comedian, then the comedian's going to give something back to them and they're going to walk away happy.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why I think it's important to have a good MC that isn't just there practicing their own jokes.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so one thing I've noticed that you've got coming up is your own solo show.
Yeah.
So you're taking that to Brighton and Edinburgh, I believe.
Yeah, and Lancaster later this month,
okay.
And also Hastings.
Ah, cool.
So, yeah.
So is this your first solo show?
Yes, it is. It's got a rebrand. It was called Alien, but...
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Roland Saunders, but he came up with the idea of calling it Salian, so the first letter of my name.
Yeah.
So like Sally Ann, but say it's Salian. And I thought, oh, that's genius. So, yeah, he's been really helpful. Hooray for Roland.
is this pretty much a full hour?
Yeah, a full hour. In Edinburgh, apparently, you only do 50.
Yeah.
50 minutes, because there's the 10-minute in and out for the next person. But I have got an hour, but I just do 50 for that.
Yeah. So how have you found creating that then? Because I assume if you're going from a 20 to a 50, going from a 5 to a 10 is a leap in itself. And I imagine a 10 to a 20 is a leap.
But then... Yeah, they are. Well, they are all leaps. But I write... When I say all the time, most days I write, and I do. Have you heard of a thing called artist pages?
No.
It's basically the artist workbook is it's probably quite hippie-ish, but I am a massive big hippie. So what they suggest in this workbook, it's not specifically for comedy, it's for any creativity. Is you get a big piece of paper or several pieces, and then for 15 minutes, you just like a brain dump. So you just write, almost without taking your pen off the page. And ideas that you might have had just flesh out, and it'd be the most basic things, but a lot of jokes will come sort of out of that.
Mm.
Or they'll come to me at 3 a.m. and I think, oh, that's hilarious. And then I'll tell my partner and he'll be like, no. and then I do it anyway because I'm just a rebel.
Yeah.
So it's been evolving over the years, really, and just a lot of the stories are about how I take everything literally as an autistic person, and how I try so hard to fit in, and I just don't, and I don't think I ever will. So that's what it's about.
Because I love the poster.
Oh, thank you.
It's just so endearing, and it gives you that, I guess, for people that don't know, you go to a comedy festival and you don't know every act, and you just see something that intrigues you and go, yeah, that looks like fun.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you thought that, because the costume came about because I did the show when it was called Alien. Back the end of last year at the LGBT festival at North Down, and it was very, very sketchy and raw then.
Yeah.
But my partner said, oh, let's make a costume in the backyard. And I was like, right then. So I put this like colander on my head and this sun shield from my old Ford Fiesta.
Yeah.
And then we taped it together. And these eye shields out of paper that I coloured in and a weird mouth.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to depict that I feel like an alien. And when I had my photograph taken formally, do you know Gary Manheim, GMB?
Yeah, I've met him a couple of times, yeah.
Oh, my God, he's an amazing photographer. I brought all the stuff to his studio and I put it all on. And bearing in mind that I've got these eye shields on, I couldn't see a thing. There's nothing at all. And my tongue is poking out through a slit from this pretend mouth.
Yeah.
He came forward to adjust the colander on my head and I licked his arm by mistake. And I went, oh, sorry. Sorry, Gary, I've licked your arm. And then he went, oh, that's all right. And then I did it again. So but I couldn't see. So I think he thought I was some sort of weird stalker licker person. But I was really chuffed with his pictures. He did a great job.
Yeah, so. I think they stand out, and they give that element of fun.
Thank you.
There's a I guess it's you read it as alien, and then you see the picture and kind of go, yeah, I've got alien. Oh, Sally. Yeah. Everything makes sense when you see it.
Oh, okay.
I think it's great. I really do. I think.
Nice. Thank you.
Imaginative things that are kind of bright and different that stand out. You know, you can have a picture of a comedian standing on a stage and that's their poster. It's like, whatever. It doesn't give you intrigue. You kind of go, oh, I know I'm going to see somebody stand on stage and tell jokes. But if somebody looks at your poster, they might not know that.
No. And they might think that I need to be referred to social services. But I mean, I do. But they won't talk to me. You see?
They blocked your number.
No. And you know what? This is funny, but it's really tragic as well. So I've got such a bad sense of direction. Do you know Richard Wheatley? He's a friend of mine.
No.
He's a comedian. He's blind. And he's got a radio program. Sometimes I guest on it at Riverside Radio. And because I've got such a bad sense, I mean, I've done the program with him about 5 times. He always has to walk me back to the station because I can't find it. And he's like, I'm blind and I'm guiding you. I'm like, all right, Richard, do you know what I mean? Don't be a drama queen, honestly. Get attention. How humiliating. Can you imagine it? And he's going, no, it's not that turning. I'm thinking, you can't see me. How do you know? I don't understand.
I knew this chat was going to be like this. I think it's great. Yeah. I really do.
Oh, my God.
So you touched on kind of your writing style as such with just brain dumps and see what happens.
Yeah.
So what is, it doesn't have to be your best, but your favourite joke, how it came about and has it changed over time as well?
Do you know what? I don't know what my favourite joke is. I mean, they all come from truth, all of them. Occasionally a little bit embellished, but I mean, when I talk about I shouldn't drive a car, I do drive a car, God knows how I passed my test, but anyway, when I talk about roundabouts and that I don't like the massive roundabouts with loads of lanes and the traffic lights,
I
can never work where you're meant to go in the lanes, and I have to follow somebody else, so I have to go where they go. It isn't where I want to go, but that's what I do. So that's why I'm always late. But I did genuinely follow this man all the way to Basingstoke recently. I mean, I didn't want to go to Basingstoke, but he, honestly, what a lovely house. Had Mark. But, he wouldn't help me get back to the motorway either. He wouldn't help me.
Oh, dear.
Rude man,
but yeah. Nice house. Cool. But you've also started a co-owned podcast.
Oh, yeah. Weird Biscuit. Yeah, me and Lisa. She's my best mate, and I met her doing improvisation before I got the sack. No, I didn't get the sack. I didn't have time to go back. We used to do shows and stuff. And I had this idea because, like, all male comedians have got podcasts, haven't they? No offense, but they have. They've all different sorts of podcasts. And I thought, why should we have one? I didn't know how to do it. And so she was left with the task of working out what we're supposed to get, what to do. And we just started doing it. They're just half-hour episodes, really.
Yeah. They're a lot of fun, and you just don't know what's going to come up when you start listening.
Neither do we. Thank you. We just pick out subjects at random out of our hat, you see, because the reason we pick subjects out of a gangster hat,
yep.
is Ronnie Biggs, the great train robber, was my uncle who escaped from prison. And honestly, he was. So that's the tribute to him. That was her idea. I mean, I don't care if it doesn't have a gangster hat, but we never know what's going to come out. They said, here's a subject. Oh, I can't see it. You read it. And then we talk about it.
So you've done 5 or 6 episodes now, I think it is?
Yeah, maybe. Five or six, something like that. It gets released on a Friday. available on all the platforms.
Yeah,
that's a little plug there for me. Thank you for that.
No, that's okay. We'll add the link to it in the description of this podcast as well.
Thank you.
I think it's just such a, in a world of podcasts which can be so not semi-serious as such, but we've now got the age of the what's the genre now called, true crime podcasts, haven't we?
Oh God, there's loads of them.
Yeah, and now we've got Weird Biscuit on the other side, and it's this complete opposite thing of like, this is all about murder and stuff, and this is about stuff that we don't know.
Yeah, this is just stuff. We don't even know what it is. It's insane. But I need to tackle with Lisa. She picks me up from the station before we record, and we record three or four at once, and then I go home and take medication. But in the footwell, right, of our car, there's always a banana skin. Like, how weird is that? Why is it there? I've asked her this.
And yeah.
She said, I don't know. So what does that mean? Somebody else puts it there? I don't understand. I mean, do you have that in your car? Because I don't.
No. My brain would then go, the next time you get in the car, is that the same banana skin?
Yes.
And I go, yeah, I haven't touched it. Well, why haven't you touched it? Why haven't you moved it?
Yes. Well, is it to remind her that she eats fruit? I mean,
5 a day.
What? Yes.
I only drive once a week, but that's my 5 a day reminder.
But that's my 5 a day from last week. So yeah, very, very weird. Yeah.
So I asked this question to everybody, which was that if you were to become super famous and you was going to do Live at the Apollo and you get to pick your walk-on music, what would you pick? But
do they get walk-on music?
Yeah, well, I think when anybody comes onto a major stage, I'm pretty sure they do walk-on music.
Oh, do they? I didn't even know that. God, I don't suppose I ever will be. But, I mean, if there was like a nuclear explosion, and I was, just randomly, I think, this is a really old reference, right, because I'm ancient. But you know that film Fame?
Yeah.
You know the one where there's the woman and she works as a welder?
Yeah.
Very glamorous. That one, that first, I was nothing but a slow-moving flame or something, isn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
All Alone I've Cried. I've done a lot of that on the train. So that, I think that would be my music for all the time I've bombed.
So are you having any music for when you walk on to do the Edinburgh and the Brighton and other fringe shows?
Oh yeah, when I walk on to do the actual show, I have the X-Files theme tune.
Ah, okay, yeah, makes sense.
So what I did is I forgot the plug-in. It's like a little whatever USB thing.
Yeah,
call it a light stick. I forgot it when I did one in Leicester, and so I got the audience to sing it because most of them remembered it. Some of them looked scared, but I was just improvising in the moment. I thought, oh, what can possibly go wrong? I haven't got my music, so yeah.
Okay, I like that. It's very much keeping on theme, and
Yeah.
It has the air of mystery as well.
Yeah, well, hopefully, because it's supposed to tie into the fact that I've always felt like an alien and I don't fit in with humans. Oh, your screen froze then. I thought you'd been abducted.
No, I'm still here. I'm still here.
Oh, you're still there. Why is it that people, when they've been abducted, that they've got a story to tell, that they always wear purple, don't they? Have you noticed that?
Okay.
I've watched a lot of these videos on YouTube and they always wear purple. Just thought it's a random fact there.
But they described it, all the experiences, in the same way?
Pretty much. Sometimes they start talking in a different language that just sounds like, well, I don't know, gobbledygook. Like, I don't know, they're talking underwater. But they always say they've had an anal probe, don't they? They always say that. Why would the aliens be interested in that? They must know what's up there, mustn't they?
Yeah, there's more than one way to get into somebody's body. And why is it always...
Up the arse.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Supposed to be the way out, not the way in.
Exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I hope I don't get abducted. So I've already got a bad back. I'll be doing that.
Yeah, I've got a show to do, you know. Come exactly. along, come along.
I don't want to go in like Hunchback of Notre Dame. I already walk like that anyway.
One other thing I always do with comedians that come on, I'm not sure if you'll be up for this or not, but I do a comedian's challenge.
Oh, right.
So what we do is I refer to people to this book.
Oh, yeah.
The Little
I've
Book
never
of,
seen that, but yeah.
The Little Book of Shit Jokes by Sid Finch. And I challenge every comedian to tell a joke from this book live on stage as part of their set, standalone, if they want to incorporate into their set, however they will choose to do it.
Yeah. It's
entirely up to them.
Yeah.
You get to pick your joke, but you only get to pick it by page number.
Oh, right, yeah.
So it's completely random. And it the idea is that what it will do is, what it's done with other people is it's got them thinking about how they can use this as part of a set and make it seem seamless. And you see
yeah,
the brain
no,
going,
definitely up
do I do
that.
It?
Yeah,
so
I do
you,
it.
If you want to give me a number between 5 and 95.
69.
It's been used.
Oh, 88.
I always know 69 has been used because that was the first one ever picked. Right, it's got this. We've got two jokes to pick from on this one.
Right.
You can have joke one or joke two.
Joke one.
Okay. What's the best time to go to the dentist? 2:30.
Oh, no, actually, that's quite good. I'm going to use it.
So if you do, record it. And then just put it on Instagram and tag us in it. And then I try to keep a little collection of what everybody's done. And then, it turns out to be a bit of fun. You see how some people have incorporated it. I've had somebody do it as like they've set it up in the room and said, right, I'm going to tell this joke. When I tell it, you laugh. Everybody goes away a winner. Go, okay. And I've had somebody that done it. They did the joke fairly near the start of their set. And they did the joke, and then they actually did a callback to it at the very end of their set, which was lovely to see.
Oh, that's very clever. I'm not that clever. I'll do my best. I know. I definitely do it.
Cool. I will send you I'll send you the screenshot of the joke in itself. Well,
yeah, nice
not difficult
one.
To remember, but yeah. So you've got it.
Yeah. No, I've got it. And do I tag you and the podcast, or just the podcast?
Just do the podcast. It's fine.
Yeah.
It'll appear on that wall.
All right. Nice.
So with the Brighton and Edinburgh shows then, are they part of the Free Fringes, or are they ticketed events and stuff like that?
The Brighton one is the Free Fringe, and that's in the quadrant at the end of the month. The Edinburgh one is at the Underbelly.
Okay.
So that's ticketed.
Yeah.
I think it's about £7. I think there's a cheaper ticket for concessions off the top of my head. But yeah, I'll be doing that between the 30th of July and the 27th of August.
Wow.
I've gone really mad by then.
That's long. Any days off?
I know. Tell me.
Any days off in that period?
I get Mondays off. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah.
I assume you'll probably be going around watching a lot of other comedy whilst you're.
Oh, yeah, definitely watch other comedy. Yeah. Definitely. And I'll be doing a lot of sleeping.
Try and avoid to catch the Edinburgh cold.
Yeah, because I think people get that because they go out like on the booze late, don't they? And they get run down. I won't be doing that. I mean, I'll get run down, but it won't be because of booze. It'll be. Eat a lot of baked beans, give me extra power.
Yeah. I think that nicely wraps up this podcast, really. So what's the socials that everybody can find you on? And I'll put those into the description for everyone to...
Oh, thanks, Mark. On Instagram, I'm at Sally Ann Comedy. No E on the Ann. That's somebody much more famous than me, who we must not mention. A different one. And yeah, what else have I got? Oh, I've got Twitter, but I don't use that very often. I think it's S_Fellows, I think.
Yeah,
I think.
I think less and less people are using Twitter nowadays for any kind
of... Yeah, it's very serious, Twitter, isn't it? Very political. I'm not clever enough to use Twitter.
Some places are best to stay away from, I think. I think Instagram, and Instagram's pretty much good enough for most comedy stuff these days. So I'll get those, and I'll grab the link as well for Weird Biscuit, and I'll put a link into that for you.
Oh, thank you.
That's okay. And you can find us on Instagram at Open Mic Comedy Pod. We're on the W's at openmiccomedypod.com. Whichever platform you're listening to this on, please give it a little review. Maybe a few stars would be clicked, would be nice to get us up the rankings. And anybody that you think would be interested in this, please share it with them, because these are great fun to put out. And if any comedians out there want to appear, drop me a DM on Instagram and we'll look at getting you on as soon as we can. So until next time, thank you very much, Sally.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun.
Good stuff. And so for everyone else, I'll speak to you all again very soon.